we're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Fellas, you know, there are actually some significant differences in college football versus the NFL or the XFL or the CFL that I actually quite like, if I'm honest. I've always liked the 15-yard pass interference instead of the spot foul, which they have in the NFL. I've always liked being down when you're down instead of needing to be touched down. I've always liked 1 foot in bounds on a catch, how big the space is for the uprights, because Lord knows college kickers. I think the new clock stoppages for first downs inside the last 2 minutes of the half are pretty good. Look, it's a little manufactured drama, but who doesn't like drama late in the game? I think the spirit of targeting is also pretty close to home. I know a lot of folks may disagree. And finally, implementing helmet radios. Those are some things in college football that I dig, but there are certainly some ways that I would change the rules of college football, or at least the product on field college football, to make it, I think, a little bit better. But first, always, as always, we're brought to you by Homefield Apparel. Stephen Godfrey, are you wearing some variation of Homefield? I can't really tell.
I had a family event. I'll shout out Voices for a Safer Tennessee. So they are working on safe gun legislation in the state of Tennessee. We made a human chain, this has a point, from the Vanderbilt Children's Hospital to the state capitol for obvious reasons to send a message. And they were like, you have to wear red, again, obvious reasons. And I was like, I don't own a red anything. And then, thankfully, our friends at Homefield reminded me that I did own a red something, not even by my request, but when the University of Mississippi line, my alma mater, came out like last year, maybe, they sent me this fine edition. It's also for basketball. This is the sort of post-Soviet or pre-Soviet looking kind of bunker where they used to play basketball at my university or that I graduated from. Nicknamed the Tad Pad, or of course, as we did in college, the Nad Pad or something just worse. It is where I actually received the degree as well when I walked across the stage. So I had one red t-shirt thanks to Homefield, and that's, so it was in my bag. So I was just like, I'll throw it on.
Alex, are you wearing,
did you see him do the quick time adjustment right there, Richard?
Yeah, I did see that. Are you wearing Fanatics chic? I've heard that. Can you run me through real quick this Fanatics baseball jersey thing?
They're really bad.
I want to assure you that I am not wearing Fanatics. No.
Okay.
I am wearing a Pittsburgh Pirates jersey, a Willie Stargell Pittsburgh Pirates jersey, because on the day of our recording, the Pirates are 5-0 for the first time since 1983. No big deal.
Okay.
Not a big deal. but. I had to put on, and I think our pals at Homefield will understand that. Fanatics is a dominant player in merchandising.
Not as dominant basically, as Homefield, of course, but dominant.
Sure. dominant in merchandising and running, not just making apparel, but retailing apparel that others make, and also acting as a licensor, not just a licensee, but basically working with leagues and teams on who gets to license their logos, which I find to be a very anti-competitive combination. They also own, they recently bought Topps Trading Cards. They are becoming a dominant player in trading cards. I think they're a little too big. I think they need to be taken down to size. And they've also had some well-publicized quality control issues over the years and made baseball jerseys designed by Nike, made by Fanatics, that have gotten people into a big tiff this year. And all I can say about that, Richard, is that it's companies like Fanatics. I probably shouldn't say this. I'm going to get our friends in trouble.
No, say it.
That make me grateful for companies like Homefield that put incredible care into every single thing that comes off their line at their factory in Speedway, Indiana, including this lovely hat that I'm wearing right now. And we need more Homefields in this world. And you can go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code SCD20 for 20% off your first order.
No
bucks.
No kidding.
If Homefield gets into the baseball game, the Major League Baseball game, I'm I'm there.
Are you going to be a Pirates fan all year? Or are you going to do the thing that most Pittsburgh people do, which is just throw a little fit as soon as they're not competitive?
I will both be a fan all year and throw a fit as soon
throw
as
a fit when they're not, but no, and then act like it, like, oh, I hate this, and then you just like talk about football.
I do hate it.
And French fries.
I do hate it.
Well, he's got the
God forbid you have one bad franchise.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's got the Penguins and the Steelers. I've never felt bad for you about this. Nokian Tires. Nokian Tires would like you to make your case for the worst roads in North America by going to NokianTires.com/potholes and be eligible to win a set of Nokian tires that come with a pothole protection warranty. I am back in New York City after a few days in Florida and immediately remembered that the roads in New York City are, let's say, not up to par. So thankfully, it's infrastructure week and I'm sure they'll be fixed very soon.
RJ, real quick, do you find that people like in the north, like I encountered this thing where they said the people in the northeast would make fun of southern road conditions, but every time I'm around New York City, the roads are like as bad as any underfunded southern city.
Yeah, dude, the roads here
I don't get terrible. It at all.
Yeah, the roads here are absolutely terrible, especially outside of Manhattan. Don't let anybody tell you anything different.
Yeah, like the BQE isn't exactly like well paved. Right. Or like, I mean, like you're gonna break. You can easily break an axle there. I mean, like there are extreme. Like I think the Florida roads are actually. Let's just turn it into a roads podcast. Florida roads fairly well maintained.
Well, it's because they're relatively new. Like a lot of them are all relatively new, obviously, because you know Florida's development is all you know within the last kind of 40 or 50 years.
Now you go to New Orleans, you might as well be driving a rickshaw. You're fucked.
Quite literally, if you're ever driving on Bourbon. Have you ever driven that part of Bourbon Street that you can drive on?
Yes. Ooh. Unfortunately.
You know, the only time in my life that I've been on Bourbon Street was with Richard one night in 2019. Yeah, it was a good time.
Did you do the touristy where like we have an LSU game, but we're going to stay in New Orleans?
Yes. Yeah, I took him up and down Bourbon Street. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
you gotta do it.
Yeah,
Steven.
I was a tourist. I did the tourist.
No, it's just LSU. Like a lot of LSU people listening will laugh at that. For like, that's okay.
We took an Uber.
Very good time.
We Ubered from New Orleans to Baton Rouge.
No, you didn't. Yes,
because we both flew into New Orleans, but flew out.
How much
of
was
Baton
the Uber?
Rouge. It was like $200.
It was. And that we weren't paying, company was paying, that we worked for at the time. I had a great time in New Orleans.
Was that Fox?
Yes. I had really good chicken.
Oh, fuck them. I hope Willie you Mays. Got Uber Black.
You ever have Willie Mays Scotch House when you were in New Orleans, Steven?
Yeah, it bangs.
I waited in line Willa for Mays. This. It was worth it.
Not Willie like the baseball player, Willa.
Yeah, it bangs.
No, I think it's Willie Mays.
That'll go pretty well.
Pretty sure.
It bangs.
Actually, no. Maybe Eater has it wrong. Maybe Eater has it wrong. If I get in trouble, blame Eater, which is where I just Googled.
Oh, no. You're right. You're right. I was thinking of a different place. Sorry. There's another place. It's spelled Willie, really, but you know what it is? It's actually a different splitter here, and you'll appreciate this with your native accent. It is spelled like Willie, and then they drop that long E.
Okay. Okay. Understandable. Which is
just, so I've never even looked at it on paper. I've just heard it from locals, and so it's like, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say Split Zone 2 was brought to you by Substack, but I would say it was brought to you on Substack for all of our premium with Substack for all of our premium subscription content, splitzoneduo.com for all of the good stuff there. All right, gentlemen, where are we on, before we get into the things that we would change, where are we on the list of, I think there's probably six or seven things I said at the top of the show that I'm okay with. Where do we fall on those things?
I am with you, and I'm happy to hear that the most NFL adjacent person of the three of us feels this way about these things. I was a little confused by what you were getting at with being cool with the new clock stoppages for first downs inside 2 minutes, because that is kind of a rollback of an even broader difference beforehand, which was that the clock was stopping until the ball was ready for play throughout the game.
Yeah, no.
And that's been rolled back. But I have to admit I didn't really notice that as like a problem to games over the course of the 2023 season, which was the first one for it. I like the 15-yard pass interference as well. I've just, maybe it's because I grew up rooting for a Pittsburgh AFC North team that would lose to the Ravens because of the Torrey Smith special, where Joe Flacco would just chuck that thing 45 yards down the field. Guy was never going to catch it, but some bad corner drags him down, and so now it's a 45-yard gain.
Because Pittsburgh was playing too aggressively?
No, but I think my point is that 15 yards is tough but fair. You know, right. What we want out of criminal justice.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me just give myself a second to distance that.
One land on you.
What if I'm okay with 1 foot in college and 2 feet in the NFL? Because I think they're both like great for their particular. Like, I think I'm fine with the difference. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's I agree. Fair. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, like I agree. Seeing, I will say, like, I think in college I'm in favor of let's prolong that third act. So I like the clock stoppage. I tend to not mind the spot foul on pass interference, but sometimes it is like to Alex's point, sometimes it can be very silly.
It's it's
on a jump ball, but also like, you know, 1 foot in, I think creates more sustained offensive drives. Obviously I'm fine with that. But then in the NFL, you get those elite level receivers right. And dude, the balletic sort of two toe thing, like, As a person who's seen every Julio Jones touchdown catch ever, like, I think that is a sort of art unto itself. So I'm bridging Richard because I don't think any of us, probably me and Alex, feel like that every rule should be universal between the two sports, between the NFL and college ranks. I think it's okay to have some differences.
No, yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, like the uprights thing is like the clearest example. I mean, you want to see no one ever make a kick ever again, make the uprights NFL style uprights as far as the width is concerned. That would be absolutely brutal.
Well, Richard, you mentioned that, and I think it's interesting, though I apologize in advance for kind of taking you out of what I imagined from our show notes was going to be the order you wanted to introduce this in.
No,
but
in other words, what we do to you every week, Alex.
Yeah, but can these, we talk about I will the hash say, marks?
Yeah, my suggestions, and I guess I'll say it now because I was going to say it anyway. My suggestions were not actually in any order. They were not ranked, besides the chaos that we will get to at the end. We have some chaotic suggestions at the end just for fun. But for now, let's talk about the rational ones. The first one is just always and forever the hash marks. All right. In the NFL, the hash marks are 18 feet, 6 inches apart. In college, they are 40 feet apart. They are significantly different. If you see a college game on an NFL field, you will often notice the two sets of hash marks on the field. If it looks weird, it is. It's because the NFL hash marks are significantly closer together. It creates a dichotomy in college football where college football is much more of a spacing dependent game than it is a mano-a-mano game, at least in the where the pass game is concerned, because of this. Defenses in college football are more apt to align with a field side and a boundary side. Now, think of the football field in your head. Pretend the offense is on the right hash. So as far as the quarterback is looking, that means to the quarterback's left, the wide side of the field, that is the field side for what the defense is concerned. To the quarterback's right, the short side of the field. That is the boundary side. It is closer to the boundary. Football coaches are very creative people. So field and boundary. You will set your defense. You will set your coverages. You will set your strengths. Often field and boundary as far as the defense is concerned. You will have your better corner, your faster corner, your more athletic corner to the field versus the boundary corner. Maybe a guy who you want to hide or who's not so great in space or maybe who's just better checking a man, whatever. One of the reasons why corner cat blitzes in college football are like sometimes insanely effective is because the corner on the short side of the field, on the boundary side of the field, just isn't coming from that wide. He's just coming from a shorter angle and he's able to get there quicker. And, you know, you can the idea in your head of that kind of blitz where, you know, like the Keely Ringo special from Georgia, where he comes off that corner and just absolutely blitzes into the quarterback and it's a hell of a sack. So this field and boundary alignment thing also creates throws in college football that don't exist on a professional football field. There are some times when you see that quarterback throw from the near hash to the wide side of the field. And like there's just the way he's making that throw is because he knows he has so much space to the sideline that he is making that throw into space more than he's making that throw, trying to, you know, because he's got a receiver who's in a specific matchup or what have you. It's just kind of throw it out there to grass and let your receiver go out there.
Because that's safer, right?
It's safer. It's easier. It lets the receiver adjust to it in the air more, just because he has more space. Like, there are some throws that a lot of coaches will tell those quarterbacks not to throw. There is like a very like staple concept in every passing game that you'll ever see called stick. It's a three wide receiver concept. Outside receiver runs straight down the field. In second receiver, number two receiver will run like a corner or an out. And then the third receiver from the outside in will run like an option route. And that outside receiver is literally only running a clear out route for all intents and purposes. You don't even really throw it if you're on the far hash because of a college quarterback's arm strength, typically. You know, the 1% of the 1%. But typically, that's just a throw that doesn't exist in the college game, really, because an offensive coach would tell his quarterback not to throw it. So, look, I've just never really loved that dichotomy. I've never really loved, like, what that creates in the sport.
The thing, Richard, is that I think it also creates something that I enjoy, something that I find charming about the sport, which is the college kicker situation. Kicking a college field goal is made easier by how wide the uprights are, a few feet wider than the NFL uprights. But it's made harder by the fact that you're kicking from a much wider, more diagonal angle if you're on the left hash or the right hash than you are in the NFL. And I personally find the NFL kickers' improvement in recent years to be pretty annoying. I think they've gotten a little bit too good and really ought to be rolled back, just because training in this sport has gotten so robust. Back in the 70s, NFL kickers were making between 40 and 65% of their field goals. Through the 80s, they were making 60% to 70%, 75%. Now NFL kickers every year for the last three have made 85%+ of their field goals. It's been well over 80% for the last 20 years. They've gotten too good. College kickers have not seen, that I am aware of, a commensurate sharpening of the sword over the last 15, 20 years. They still miss a ton of kicks. I'm worried that if we smush the hash marks together, you're going to lose the charm of the big missed field goal with the frequency that we get the missed field goals now in the college game. And I like that.
The charm. I think, like, the charm of inefficiency.
No, I like that. I think that I think that when you have less reliable field goal kicking, it puts more on the coaches to consider going for it on fourth down, which I think is one of the most exciting plays in football. I think that the equalizing capacity of shoddy field goal kicking is a really exciting part of college football that just doesn't exist much in the NFL. Like, think about how cool it was a couple of years ago when the Cowboys had that kicker, Brett Maher, I think was his name, who missed like a billion field goals in that playoff game.
Yes.
And think about how cool that was. Think about how fun that was. I mean, you felt a little bad for him, and I'm sure that his family struggled to see that. But the wild card that was in that game is like that to a toned down version in every single college football game. And no, college kickers are never going to be as good as NFL kickers, but I have real worries about letting these guys get too good and giving them the advantage of the wider uprights with tighter hash marks where you don't have to kick at the same diagonal angle and you're effectively a couple feet closer, a couple yards closer to the uprights when you kick. I enjoy the chaos of college kickers not being that good, and I don't want to help them.
Godfrey, do you want to regulate the kicker situation writ large in college football?
I think I totally agree with Alex.
Ooh, okay. Right.
Hell yeah. All right. Yes, Steven. Yes.
Because I don't want to lose. I don't know if I'd use the phraseology of like something's too successful, we must destroy it. But I will say that
that's America, baby.
There is that's your America. There's a certain level of automatic expectation in the NFL when a team gets inside the 35.
Yeah.
And that, I think, kills a lot of suspense. And I think it also affects play calling and decision making. And it almost just becomes a sort of instant safety valve that I've never really enjoyed as much as like, all right, let's take that exact same decision making matrix in college down two, if you want, or down three or tied or whatever, and then just apply it to a lower probability circumstance, which is the fact that, look, these kids are going to shank more often. The pressure's real. It's closer to the defined collegiate experience of sports, which is like a loud partisan crowd, a young person who's not entirely as trained or, you know, knowledgeable in the craft. And then you're opening the door for something weird and fun to happen. So by and large, I think I agree with that. I'm more interested in the hash marks for the passing stuff that you talked about. Although I don't know if I want to change anything. It's just more, I think more people, what Richard said about hash marks. In fact, how often I don't think hash marks get talked about on broadcasts at all.
No, it's kind of crazy. It's crazy. Like I was talking to before the semifinals games, I was talking to a team that was game planning for, or had game plan for Michigan during the season. And the coach told me, he was like, yeah, one of the things we specifically repped in practice is Michigan coming out of the kickoff when they get a touchback. Because, and it's one of those things where, like, sometimes football coaches tell you that they practice something that, like, I think they're over practicing, right? In that, like, they're over practicing because they saw it on film, and because they saw it on film maybe once or twice, it means that they're definitely going to do it and that they need to plan for it. And this thing was that Harbaugh was like militant about, they put the ball on one hash or the other, not in the middle of the field, because remember, you get a touchback, the quarterback tells the ref where he wants the ball. And so I guess the theory was that they were telling JJ to put it on one side of the field or the other, not in the middle. And then they would run a play that was essentially, or often run a play that was essentially formation to the boundary, which is where you put sort of the bulk of your formation into the short side of the field. And the defense basically has to make a choice, because if the defense puts the bulk of their bodies to the short side of the field to cover the pass, okay, you get it. Now you're light on the field side. And so then you have to deal with the fact that you don't have as much defensive resources allocated to the wide side of the field. And it's also the wide side of the field. So you're dealing with however much space, you know, the 2/3 of the field space or whatever it is, Alex.
Also, two notes on the kicking thing that just stuck with me. I'm going to correct this in real time, and we're not even going to go back and edit it, because I think a lot of people think this. Do you know that a couple decades ago, they standardized the crossbar with the upright width, excuse me, between NFL and college? They're the same. They're the 18 same? Feet, 6 inches now. They're now the same. Yes, they're the exact same.
I actually in don't know head, that I knew that. I actually don't know head, that I knew that.
In my head, when you started talking about this, I thought that the NFL's uprights were like a foot or two closer together than colleges. But too. No longer. I think they used to be, but they no longer are. Also, it's interesting because you can find kickers who think that the college kickers currently have it easier with the wide hashes because of like wind angles and things like that. Because like you can kind of just drive it in one direction as opposed to having to really get the wind right when you're kicking on a more centered up part of the field. That doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And I've heard from special teams coaches before that the wide angle does what you would expect that it does, just because it takes you farther away from the uprights. But there's much to consider with special teams coaches, and I wanted to make sure I represented that perspective as well.
Okay. All right. Also, in special teams adjustments, the XFL kickoff, bring it to college, which I honestly think is going to happen anyway after the NFL. So the NFL adopts a version of the XFL kickoff. It's pretty much the same. They've changed some of the alignments as far as where the kickoff team and the receiving team actually line up. And I think they've changed like the touchback length, how far they bring the touchback out when you don't kick it in the end zone or what have you. It's much more penal to not kick it in the setup zone. Basically, the NFL is like forcing kickers to kick it to the returner. So I think this needs to be a play that, first of all, I think it needs to come to college because more than anything, it is a football play. Like, the kickoff is not a football play. The kickoff is like a hybrid rugby play. Like, make it a gridiron football play. Like, you're going to, I can't wait to see the creativity that NFL teams are going to have with this play this season. You're going to see some teams do like a zone blocking variant. You're going to see some teams do a man blocking variant. You're going to see some teams put two returners back. I think you'll probably see most teams end up putting two returners back there. So yes, they may be a man down. God, you are going to see some hilarious, like, breaking of the lines by the returner, and then the kicker is standing there. And you want it. Look, we all love a kicker getting broke off. There are some kickers that are going to get absolutely broke off this season. It's going to be absolutely hilarious. Look, the player safety stuff, I don't want to hand wave that away. Like, yes, that's also there, but violent game is what it is. Yeah, we probably shouldn't have players screaming 25 miles an hour down the field, you know, into a wedge or into a returner. But then again, as we know, we're not seeing any kicks returned, even in college. 538 found in 2020 that after the touchback was tweaked and the fair catch for kickoffs was instituted in college football, kicks were only returned 40% of the time. That was down from 80% in 2007. Like, we are also not really seeing kicks being returned in college football. Now, a point here that I want to make, we'll see it show up in the NFL in a certain way versus how I think we'll see it in college. This is going to alter roster construction in the NFL edgewise. You're going to have more like tight end-ish bodies and linebacker-ish bodies, because you're going to need to have guys that can play on this unit, right? You're going to need to have guys that can execute this play.
Yeah, you can't put 10
DBs. Do you mean
DBs.
Edgewise as in the actual rush edge?
No, you mean
the edge of the roster?
Yes. I mean, like,
of who's
players,
getting cut.
Yes, I mean players 46, yeah, 47, 48, 49, and 50 on the roster. Now it's going to tweak some roster construction there. It's going to tweak some usage there. The returner himself, he's not, I don't think, I don't want to say the returner is the returner we've all known and loved is going to go away, but like, you're going to see more of like a running back, like a third running back you put back there now, in my opinion, because you're going to have somebody that's got vision. You're going to have somebody that can read blocks and react to them and come off of them. I think that's just a personal opinion. And so in college, if this is something that we bring to college, by the way, I think the NFL is going to take a year, vet this out and see what works and what doesn't, and probably tweak it again next offseason,
mm-hmm.
just because that's kind of how they work. I would sort of treat this year as like a trial run, the 2024 season as like a trial run for this. But in college, I think you may have to have a redshirt eligibility carve out for players, maybe young freshmen or whatever, who play on this unit and this unit only, or something like that. I don't know how you do it, but I think that there's a way to tap into the roster depth of a college room. College room got six tight ends, and there's a way to do that to make it work.
Gonna get confusing. You like how confusing it's been with COVID about whether someone's got eligibility remaining? Not saying you shouldn't do it. Like, confusing is not a reason to limit the eligibility of athletes. But boy, the answer
to if your favorite player has eligibility left or not is always yes. They will always find.
I feel like the answer is if he wants to, right? Like, I mean, we're if it's a player, well, that's actually I cut myself off.
A quarterback.
If you know their name and you're sort of like, if you're aware of them enough by name brand, but that's not true because like hardcores are going to know 20, 30 names on their team. But yeah, I mean, the answer is usually just. Until further notice or the next pandemic, it's if they want to have eligibility, they probably do. Unlike,
honestly,
I am fine with that. Yeah. Unlike certain people, other two people that aren't me on this podcast, I don't want to name names, who have a holy war of strife against people who are coming back to play college football and maybe make a little money off of it.
It's a quarterback development thing, as we've talked about. I will note
taking jobs from people. Typical.
Taulia Tagovailoa, the longtime Maryland quarterback, actually lost an eligibility thing recently.
Yeah, because his agent literally lied.
Yeah. Taulia had been in college since, I think, 2018 at Alabama. It might have been 2019. Either way, he was in college through 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, and tried to get either a sixth or a seventh year after playing in five different years. And the NCAA was like, no.
If you miss this, he tried to get an extra year. And like Taulia, in air quotes, put out a statement that was like, oh, yeah, the only thing I did was like kneel down in the fifth game or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then
honor Tua, who had been hurt that year.
And a bunch of people were like, no, you did it. You threw like six passes in the fifth game. Like you played. Anyway. All right. Godfrey, as the arbiter here, where are you? Are we bringing this to college?
Has anyone said anything? Like, I defer to Richard on Scheme on the show, and I'll usually just ask a coach if I have a question. Like, I have no problem. And in fact, I always say this, and I'll repeat myself on the show. Ask questions. If you are not an actual coach, ask questions of coaches and people who work in football, because then you're going to learn, and my job is to help everyone else listening learn. So to that end, since this news has arisen, has anyone been mad about it? I don't think so.
No, but you know what? It's because people aren't paying attention. People are going to be mad about this in September. I am certain that people are going to be mad about it. Yeah, dude. The second people see this, think about, let's say you have a watch party for the first game of the season and you've got a bunch of friends over who just, you know, only watch football on Saturdays and Sundays. Like, they would have watched college football on Saturday and it's an uncanny valley thing. When you go and watch it, if you watch the kickoff on YouTube, like, it does look weird. I'm not saying it doesn't. It looks weird because it is weird, because it's different. And I think people are going to be like, oh, this is weird, like, yada, yada. What's going to happen is as soon as somebody returned it for a touchdown, everybody's going to be like, oh, hell yeah, this is sick.
Yeah, and I also think that reps will increase familiarity, and I think by the end of the season, most people won't care unless there's something that is sort of game-breaking about it. I think if you polled people right now, so let's eliminate the knowledge issue, Richard. Like, if you grabbed 100 college football fans off the street in some like college football rich area, like Dallas, Texas or something, and you gave them a choice of changing the kickoff or just getting rid of the commercial gaps between kickoffs, I think more people would be pissed off. Like, more people are focused on the gaps between, hey, we're going to kick it off, now we're going to go to break.
See,
I think people would.
I think it's
if it was part of a sequence where we just got on with it, I think people would be fine.
You guys always bring this up, and I just, like, I don't really care about the commercial thing. Like, I don't, like, I don't know. Like,
it's because you're still in the press box.
I'll just look at my phone. Like, when I'm at the house. Like, yeah, I don't care.
It's because you're still in the press box.
At a game, I will give you that at a game, it's actually worse being at a game.
Yeah, it sucks ass.
Than watching it on TV.
Yeah. Dude, having, the, like, oh, God, having kids or just mixed company in general at a game in the stop-start.
Oh, my God. Steven, my enemy at a game in the stands, especially if it's cold, my mortal enemy is the dude with the orange mitts. Because that's the dude who, when he comes out onto the field, actually, I think the field's diversified in recent years. When they come out onto the field and they say it's going to be, they put up their hands to the press box. That means you got 5 minutes doing nothing.
I have a friend. Don't like that person. I have a friend from college who literally does that job, by the way. It's actually really funny. So I get it, but I think, Godfrey, what you're talking about is what people notice and what people don't. And I don't think people realize how bad the kickoff stuff has gotten.
What you're saying is, if we still worked at like SB Nation or a place like that, what we would have ready to go would be like an awesome social media reactions post on that first like week zero, maybe not even week zero.
The second,
not great this year, but like
the second,
the Thursday night of week one.
Yes.
And be like, what in the God fear in hell? Like just an instant revulsion of what's happening.
Because the other thing is,
you'll probably get that.
Right.
And especially if you have like an active Facebook account.
And remember the other thing, like, it's not like it's the thing that it's not like it's like Alex actually brought up a great point. Like, Alex was talking about how he hadn't really noticed the clock stoppage thing because it's just something that is kind of tucked into the flow of the game. This is how we start the fucking game. Like, it's everybody is paying attention to this. So I cannot.
Okay, what if I can, I guess I'm not bartering with you, but like, would you agree with the presentation that like kickoffs, whatever, right? Whatever. I'm willing to cede that in the name of safety or expediency or just, I get it. That's fine. We've seen some data. We're going to try this. I still feel like the more electric moment is the punt return.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Like in my mind's eye, I think about like, you know, Deion Sanders and Eric Metcalf and like everybody grew up on like a, you know, Devin Hester, like somebody grew up, you know, listening to this has like in their mind's eye, like a dynamic badass punt returner. Yeah. Do we have dynamic badass kick returners in our mind's eye anymore?
Not really, but
because
I think
the numbers have it's diminished year over year.
Right. I think this gives you that. And remember, like the NFL is creating a penal touchback rule to force returns, right? If you don't get it into the setup zone, I think you bring it out to like the 40 or something, which is actually worse than the XFL rules. And it's because they want returns. They want it to be a football play. They want it to be, they want the action there. And I'm very interested in what happens. God, one of the funniest things to me about the NFL is that for all of the NFL's machine-like precision, because of human frailty, the game breaks in some way. A Hail Mary happens, a kick six happens, a whatever happens. And this is just rife for it. I cannot wait. And by the way, shout out to the homies at EA, because the folks programming Madden have to find a way to put this in the game without it having ever happened on a NFL professional football field. Yes, XFL, no NFL.
I'm always careful about what I can talk about there, but the thing that I think I can say is that the hardest thing to do. So people are excited about names and people being in the game. Of course, that's been the national story. And what's my stadium going to look like and all that kind of stuff. Like, the hardest thing to do is that physics engine is the actual, like, what you know, you control one player at a time usually, or you control like the quarterback to the receiver on the pass. They've got to like make fake football players do something that's never happened before.
You better call the UFL now. You better call the UFL and say, fellas, we got to put some ping pong balls on you and figure this
just
puppy
get,
out.
Yeah, just get tape on it. Yeah, I was going to say, just get tape on it and then run simulations. I guess that's probably the best thing you can do.
All right, the next
thing. You know what, though? They could also update it with a patch after a couple, like, a couple weeks of the season. Yeah.
All right, the next thing I'm doing. Folks, if you're a defensive person, you like defense, you coach defense, you play defense, I'm giving the game back to you. It's time to embrace tradition. It's time to go back to our roots. It's time to take our country back. Enough of the RPOs, at least to the extent that they are ran in college football. We are nerfing this 3 yard down the field, ineligible man down the field gray area thing. In the NFL, your offensive lineman can only get 1 yard down the field. In college, your offensive lineman can get 3 yards plus
20
down the field. I specifically remember a snap in the Clemson A&M game a few years ago at Clemson when I can't remember which team was on offense, but I will never forget watching the film and seeing an offensive lineman 7 yards down the field when the ball was released by the quarterback.
Richard,
on call.
I sat next to Mike Pereira when you're at the old, not the Big 12, you kids today know, but a Big 12 that had Texas and Oklahoma and not Cincinnati. 1 year at the deal, and I guess he was there for Fox, where he just happened to like sit down next to me during a press conference, and they started running. This was not something that was filmed for TV. Richard, they started running the disparity of calls in that, like, I'm talking about, let's say 8 years ago, Big 12, the disparity of calls on linemen. I made a joke just a second ago about 20 yards. I shit you not. I won't even name the offender, but there was a Big 12 member where two linemen were 10 plus down the field.
Unbelievable. 10
plus at release.
And what that creates, if you don't realize, it creates a conflict in the defense. The defense don't.
Oh, Pereira. Yeah, sorry. Pereira was like, this is actually going to ruin football.
Right. It's not
targeting, not anything else. This is going
to
ruin football.
It makes it impossible to play defense. If you're a defender, you kind of have to, you need to know if it's run or pass, not in a, they caught up before the line, but like, we don't cheat into the play to hide what it is. Football players are an average of 6.5 seconds.
Hang on 1 second. Hang on, because you're smarter than anybody else at this. When you are saying they need to know run or pass, what you mean specifically is there's a certain, it's a series of seconds of, if you're defense, you're reading and then you're reacting. So you're constantly at that disadvantage because half the field knows what's going to happen, or half the field knows what they want to happen. When linemen are moving, just so everyone, we can slow this down. When linemen move, what defensive players do is they instantly make the decision in their head, this is now a run play. So let's eliminate all pass possibilities from what's about to happen in the next 2.5 to 5 seconds.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Football plays.
Therefore, I'm going to pursue. I'm going to abandon pass coverage. I'm going to make a decision that is specific to the run, but would be wildly detrimental to covering a pass play, right?
Yes. If I am, let's take the most basic example. Let's say I am a linebacker who's lined up, you know, over a tight end, for instance. Let's kind of make this as easy as possible. And I either have that tight end in man coverage, or I'm fitting the run. I'm taking a gap. Let's make it as easy as possible.
Those are the two things you might be responsible for before the snap.
Right. So if I see the tackle gets 2-3 yards down from the line of scrimmage, or I guess up from the line of scrimmage, it's a run. All right. I need to go fit the run. I need to go take that guy on because he's 300.
Not worry about the tight end.
Right. Like, fuck the tight end. Like, I got to fit my gap because the guy's 325 pounds. And if I'm not coming at him with force, he's going to run me over. Now, if that tackle takes a pass set, well, then now I know, all right, I've got that tight end in man coverage, and wherever that tight end goes, it's a pass, and I've got to be on him like white on rice. So this gray area thing changes the way you play defense. It creates a level of conflict in defenders that I don't think is fair, that I don't think is with the spirit of the game, Alex.
I would settle for the 3 yards downfield before the quarterback throws the ball rule to actually be enforced at 3 yards. I would settle for that. I know that this drives defensive coaches nuts, but I also think that the way that it is now offends some offensive coaches who feel like they're good at drawing up RPOs and see a lack of enforcement as diluting the art form. I remember talking years ago, this was 2018, for a story you and I were doing together, Richard, with Sonny Dykes, who had been on staffs that were doing RPOs and RPO-like things for the better part of a decade by that point, maybe back to when he was at Louisiana Tech in the early 2010s, arguably back to when he was with Leach many years before that. And what he said to me was, quote, I'll just read it, what'll happen is somebody will do a good job publicizing the fact that guys are down the field, and they'll basically go lobby the officials and the people making the rules. And then they'll send out a deal, a press release that says, this is going to be a point of emphasis for us in officiating calling this in that conference in that week. And then they'll call it and call it and call it for a couple weeks. And then week 3, week 4, week 5, you look up and guys are back to being 7 or 8 yards downfield like they always happen.
Yep.
I think that it would be, and I think what Sonny was talking about there was that conference offices would do this because that's how in-season officiating tends to be handled. For instance, like, the Big 12 deciding on the fly how they're going to treat horns down every year. There is
the SEC's problem now.
There is a national officiating, I don't know if the word is czar. I think it's still Steve Shaw. His name comes up every offseason, who every year is you know, leading a committee that is responsible for sort of reminding the officials, hey, here are the things that we're going to look out for this year and that we're really going to be hard asses about this year. And the 3 yard thing is not typically, I don't believe, one of those things. It probably should be. And look, you give it 3 weeks of teams getting 4 or 5 flags a week for having linemen beyond 3 yards downfield, and then you actually stick to it with some modicum of consistency, I think that this gets reined in pretty good. And the reason why I like it at 3 yards, but actually enforced and not one, is that it allows more play calling creativity with when you get 3 yards than when you get one. It requires more play calling skill, more quarterback receiver timing skill if you only allow one. But that's why I'm cool with it being different in the NFL than it is in college football. In the NFL, you have fewer routes at your disposal with the 1 yard rule than you have with the 3 yard rule in college, because the receiver has to get downfield quickly because he's only got a split second for the line before the linemen are going to be more than a yard downfield. So you get a lot of these glance routes that are kind of like a go, kind of like a slant where the receiver kind of, you know, just lightly angles towards the middle. In college, you get much more varied route combinations because 2.5 seconds or whatever is a lot better than one. And I like that schematic diversity. So please just enforce the 3 yard thing. Make defense possible, but still difficult. That's fine.
Loss of down. Penal if you're going to enforce the 3 yard thing. Make them hurt.
Tough but fair.
I'm thinking, I mean, like, again, yeah, this is, if you're asking me to be an arbiter here, this is going to come down to personal preference. And I feel like I was told this wasn't a popular take, but maybe times have changed where, like, I got just like fatigued by the Big 12 scores for a while. Like I started to kind of zone out.
You know, like a 56-49 in week six.
Like here's my problem.
Mason Rudolph, 347 yards.
New Tennessee Titan. It's hard to appreciate a game like that after the fact. If you were watching it, you're sitting there, you're just having a beer or you're gambling or hitting the over or whatever, I get that. But I'm trying to take everything you're doing in this hypothetical lab and then figuring out like what is the end result here. And the end result, this one simply would be more better defense, right? At least for a couple possessions per game in a high scoring league like that Big 12.
Or just to give them some tools back, man.
And I think that that's okay in terms of the, now I'm flipping the switch and thinking like a Hollywood executive, this is an entertainment product now, right? This is just a casual viewer. I don't care about Kansas State, Oklahoma State, but it's on TV and I'm going to watch it. I think for myself, this is sample audience of one. I tend to be more locked in and intrigued by the 42-38 final that has gaps in the scoring. Like it's a little bit more of a chess match than it is just like, volley serve. I kind of zone out on this.
Like Oklahoma, Texas. Like, what was it? Oklahoma, Texas Tech with Mahomes and Baker, where they where they went tit for tat the whole day.
And maybe that's not even a good example, but just because you knew you were seeing some like kind of crazy fun quarterback moment. But there were, Richard, underneath the one that you can recall like that, there's also like for every game that you could recall like that, there's like 25 that was just like, this is fucking 7-on-7, dude.
Here's the thing.
And so that's, I would like to get away from that. So I think I'm in favor of
this. It's a funny point that you bring up because like I got into this conversation with somebody about basketball, right? Everybody knows what bad basketball looks like. And bad basketball is horrible because the game is predicated on scoring, right? You just have to score. Right. It's what it is. If you're not scoring, it's horrible. The Virginia First Four game comes to mind. But in football, bad football can still be entertaining because the game's not predicated on scoring. And as you're saying, Godfrey, like you could still get a little something out of bad football.
Well, I mean, yeah, like if you're a basketball person, I'm sure that like, I mean, right, that's the whole Sickos Committee joke, shout out. Like it's, we're going to watch anything. I mean, for God's sakes, we turned a 3-2 final on a Thursday night SEC game into a fucking like, you know, a piece of lore. In the you know, every day should be Saturday expanded universe. So I get that, but I think casuals and just maintaining mainstream attraction of the sport, I think they're going to fade out on just having these mindless 56 or you know, games in the 60s, 50s. I feel like I'm going to get yelled at, but I also feel pretty confident in saying that like, that's not great narrative. Like entertainment, maybe people are going to get mad. I don't know.
All right. I will. I have one more that's kind of a safety thing more than anything else. Get that umpire out of the middle of the field. Like, enough is enough. First and foremost, it's not safe. It's kind of wild that we still do that. That the umpire is still standing in the middle of the field as like a fourth linebacker. The NFL did away with this in like 2010. And every season there's like that viral clip or two where the umpire tackles a ball carrier, or the umpire impedes a wide receiver, yeah. or the umpire gets absolutely depleted. Like, I don't think we need
he's
that.
He's fighting for his life. He's fighting for his life out there. Sometimes I like it when it looks like he like lays out a player, and it's like, no, like he's turtling himself so that he doesn't
absolutely die. Jacked, yes.
Yeah. Put him in pads.
Who has, and Alex, I think you've done this too. Like, when you go and stand on the sidelines at a game or a live scrimmage, like, I don't think people realize how fast that shit's happening to someone who's not a football player, not in pads and in a sort of, let's call it vulnerable position. Like, that shit's legitimately scary. I've been taken off of my feet before at a scrimmage and did everything I could to get out of the fucking way.
There is a, maybe it's a conspiracy theory. Maybe it's something offensive coaches don't admit. Maybe it's something offensive coaches won't admit, but there can be a buzz the tower experience early in games to kind of get that ref's head on a swivel. I think offensive coaches know what they're doing when they run crossing routes on the first play of the game, for instance.
Okay.
Like, get out of my way type of thing for the rest of the game.
A little buzz the tower.
Yeah.
Get them a little unsettled.
Or you're just setting a pick.
Exactly. You're so that they're not paying attention. So that they're not paying attention specifically to the holding that your offensive line is doing, for instance.
Yeah.
They may be a little more worried about what's coming to them. It's just crazy that is still a thing. And like, when you have that one throw, that like low throw over the middle, and the umpire has to like duck so he doesn't get decapitated. Like, what are we doing here? Come on. Are you with me, Godfrey? Or do I have your support here?
Acknowledging that I'm pretty staunch, like I'm pretty ignorant here as to what the pushback would be, like what the counter argument would be. This seems fine, unless someone in the officiating community can just immediately come out and say, no, we need to be there because of X.
I do.
It's something I've never really thought about, to be honest. Like it's never occurred to me in all these years.
I do anticipate umpires, or I should say officials, probably saying it allows the umpire to see the game better in the box. You can see see the holdings. You can see the ineligible hand to the face kind of stuff. Like, I'm sure that is the counter argument, or a counter argument to what's going to happen. All right. When you
watch a spring game, Richard, where do you always see the head coach standing in a spring game?
Yeah. Yeah, he stands behind the quarterback a lot.
Right behind the quarterback.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Well, but if it's a defense, I'm telling you, if it's a defensive-minded coach, you'll see him standing right at that umpire's position.
Sure, yeah.
I think, let's either get rid of that official, or we make both coaches, depending on who's on offense and who's on defense, stand in the field. Yeah. I like this idea.
Or you move him. You just, the NFL moved him back behind the safety kind of stuff. Thing. Okay. The other thing, this is kind of tangential to the reffing thing, which is like expand some of the sky judge, like ref review official duties. Obviously college is actually way ahead of the NFL in the like review thing, but maybe give him a couple more duties. Some of the penalties that we all don't really love so much. Holding, for instance, maybe PI, which I know the NFL did PI reviewable and it was an absolute mess and they went away from it. But there are some things that I think the sky judge and the transparency that instituted when the XFL did it a couple of years ago was good for the game, is good for the game. Okay, let's do chaotic changes now. Not serious ones, but why the hell not ones? First and foremost, the fourth.
Oh, mine are serious.
Yeah, okay. All right. The fourth and 15 onside kick replacement is a thing that I think should happen. Again, make it a football play, and make it a football play where things are a little more even as to the offense actually retaining the ball. Maybe it's not fourth and 15, maybe it's fourth and 12, maybe, you know what I mean, but whatever, something like that. I think that fourth and 15 onsides play, which I'm actually a little surprised the NFL didn't do that with the kickoff change, even though I kind of get why they didn't, because they didn't want to like throw all the baby out with the bathwater. No, I do not care about surprised onside kicks. I think there were three of them in the NFL in 2023. It's not a thing that happens, even though the Jags did one a couple years ago against the Chiefs in a regular season game. That was awesome coming out of the half. Anyway, I don't care about surprised onside kicks. Sorry, it's gone. Way the dodo. Alex, give me one of yours. I thought you were kidding, but you're actually serious.
I'm going to throw in one more because it relates to onside kicks. I think you should be able to advance as the kicking team, both a muffed punt and an onside kick recovery. I think those rules have been there for a long time to try to basically encourage teams to attempt returns because it caps the damage if you mess it up. And I think that that is dumb, and you should be able to take a muffed punt to the house or do that awesome thing where you recover an onside kick and run it on your merry way. I think the safety should be worth 11 points. I've said this for years. I feel very strongly about this.
11?
11 specifically. I think a prime Why number 11? Is good. Well, I think 11
is... I'm here
is,
for it. Yeah. I'm here to support you. I just don't know where did 11 come from?
11 is good because this is a sport that already has a ton of threes and sevens. And if you make it an odd kind of out there number, like 11, for instance, let's say you give up a safety, then there's no world in which there's a very unlikely world in which the team that gives up the safety could then wind up, you know, tying the game with a field goal, or even with touch, you know, I like uneven numbers.
You're going to dissuade anybody with the ball inside the five from doing shit all of anything. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of the safety being that monumental. But I feel like, man, people are going to run in fear from this.
That also
here's why safety should be 11 points.
That intentional safety clock thing that a lot of teams do at the end of the game, too.
Oh, it would kill
it. Okay,
absolutely.
With that. I'm okay with that. It's not a football play. But like, look, I think that's just chicken shit.
The safety is the rarest big play in football. A couple years ago, when I was first exploring this idea at Banner Society, I asked Brian Fremo, who's a great college football data puller and analyst, who went through more than 220,000 possessions. And he has this research up on his website. 27% of drives are a touchdown, 0.2% are a safety. The safety is incredibly rare and also more difficult to get than a touchdown, because a touchdown, I'm not trying to disrespect how hard it is to get the ball in the end zone, but all it takes is one great play. A defensive safety or a special team safety, but you know, most safeties being made on defense, requires the offense, defense, special teams working in concert to create a field position advantage. And then to make the big play when the offense is explicitly trying to prevent that one thing from happening. It's really hard to do. It's a team accomplishment, and it's so rare, and that should be rewarded. It's the equivalent, having the safety only be worth 2 points is the equivalent to me of giving, if the team loads the bases in baseball and hits a home run, you say, this is only worth half a run. Or if you're playing skee ball and you put it in the middle hole in skee ball, you get the smallest amount of points, even though that's the hardest thing to do, the rarest thing to get. It just doesn't make sense. And I made sure to check into this too. There's no historic reason why the safety was made to be worth 2 points. I went back and read Walter Camp's Book of College Sports, where he was explaining the rules of this new pigskin game that he was going to popularize in the United States. No clear reason why it's two. Says nothing about it. It's just the way that it was decided it would be. It would create some odd game theory situations, there's no doubt. You would see teams that were down, like let's say you made the safety worth 11 points. You would see a team that was like on the 15-yard line of the opponent in the last minute. You would see them like explicitly try to go down at the one and give the ball back to the other team to get the safety. I think that would be funky, but I think it would be fun.
An offshoot of Alex's idea here to kind of break the scoring mechanisms of the game, the 9-point XFL touchdown with 3-point conversion, so a touchdown and a 3-point conversion. I like that, where instead of going for two at the two, you go for three at the 10. So higher risk reward factor. changes the comeback math late in a game, and tweaks that a little bit. And I've always sort of been interested with that since they started doing the XFL a couple years ago.
I like that a bit. Can I give you one that is true chaos and please, that I'm a little less sure about because it might be a safety issue, but I like it anyway.
Please.
You get one play a game where everyone is eligible and you don't have to disclose using that play.
A11?
One play a game where except that's never been, strictly speaking, allowed in college football or the NFL.
But, well, neither is what you're saying.
Well, right. I'm saying make it allowed. Play a game explicitly where you can line up the way you would line up on a normal play, and everybody is eligible. You only get to use it once, and you don't have to disclose when you're doing it.
You do have to yell it out though, like it's like you're playing in the street, like we used to as kids. So you have to yell out like Yahtzee or something like that. I think you do have to have an audible holler, or maybe like you produce a hidden flag or something. Sure. Like,
maybe you yell it out. Theatric. Maybe you have to yell it out within 5 seconds of the snap. But here's the thing: I liked it a lot in the 2015 AFC playoffs when the Patriots beat the Ravens with that series of plays where they manipulated who was on the ends of the line of scrimmage. And, you know, the only eligible receivers in the line of scrimmage are supposed to be the guys on the end of the line of the seven that are on the line of scrimmage. And the Patriots used Steven Ridley, a running back. They flexed him out wide and they put him on the line covered up by another wide receiver, which made the left tackle an eligible receiver. And then Baltimore didn't see what they were doing, and they threw these completions that turned that game. The NFL banned that. The NFL made it so you couldn't do it and tightened up players with lineman numbers are allowed to do. But that was fun. That was creative. And so it was banned.
The quarterback,
I think you bring that back.
The quarterback can't run in this situation. I don't think. I don't think the quarterback can run. I think the quarterback has to stand and throw if you're going to do this. Would you just send the other 10 down the field and the quarterback just runs? I don't know. Maybe that would actually be
sure. Hey, that's fine.
Maybe that would also be fun. All right.
Those are my thoughts.
I have one. It's not big. It's more of a personal like issue. No offsetting anything. Now wait. No offsetting penalty. Let me say this. No. If there's a little tete-a-tete, there's a little bit of business.
Yeah.
If we're pushing, if we're shoving, if we're being dickheads, if we're doing horrible stuff in the scrum or the pileup, then we need an instigator and we need a guilty party. Mm. So I hate that bullshit when they throw like offsetting 15. You just wasted my time as a viewer and a fan and a coach, and you just wasted my time. If you're going to confab, if you're going to throw flags, if you're going to stop the pace of play in the game and the flow of the game, then there needs to be a guilty party.
Okay. I can get down with that. What I don't like is like when there's a 15-yard penalty and a 10-yard penalty and they negate them. Like, I'm like, give the team five yards. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
If you do something that's ticky-tack, that's 5 or 10 yards, but then there's a 15-yarder against you, well, then, like, congratulations. You guys just gained 5 yards. Like,
what do you think about what do you think about multiple fouls on the play multiplying the yards? Like, you got a 15-yard penalty and a 5-yard penalty.
Why should it be open season to do whatever you want just because someone else on your team already committed a penalty?
Why so in other words, so if you see the personal foul and you're like, fuck, I can get mine in and it'll still only cost us the 15. Now fuck that. Make it a 45-yard penalty. Yep.
I completely agree. While we're at it, let's take a look into whether half the distance to the goal is still serving the best interests of the sport. Mm. You do a 15-yard penalty on your own 14-yard line. Is that a touchdown?
Mm. They're not going to like that
Put the ball at the 1-inch line?
The street's not going to like that one.
I would just move it to the 1.
Let's just explore this. I'm just asking questions at this stage.
I don't want a referee to award points like that, automatically move it to the 1.
I don't actually see this being a problem in the real world, but it's a theoretical problem that at some point some team can make into a real problem, is that half the distance to the goal becomes extremely invaluable as the field shrinks.
Yes.
And you don't really see teams doing it, but I always wonder, who is going to be the team that just continues to try to jump the snap at on first and goal at the one and just see if they can do it four times in a row.
Well, I think they keep
taking offside penalties.
They would start. They would call it delay game.
The refs could then push the button that they have, which is the like you're acting ridiculously, you're in trouble button.
Conduct.
And there's even like a I don't have the language in front of me, but every official who's listening to this, and I know there are a few. There's a control of the game clause, basically, that I don't think I've ever seen exercised, but that could be exercised. But anyway, half the distance to the goal is, I don't know. I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's tough, but fair.
My last one, just for chaos, let's throw out all the stuff about making life easier for the defense that I talked about for the first like 30 minutes of this podcast. I've always been fascinated by the CFL running start wide receiver. Like I've always just thought that is
Arena
awesome.
League used to have this.
Yeah.
Slot receiver. One, not more than one, but I want one slot receiver. Maybe you have to be lined up in the slot, Richard.
In motion at the snap. Yeah. I don't know. It's always been cool. Is cool.
Actually, fuck that. Make it. How about this to take it all back to what we talked about today? Maybe it has to be the receiver furthest from the quarterback.
Mm.
So you're like field side, because that's the hardest throw. So, right, a receiver in motion, we should explain ourselves. A receiver in motion would give you an advantage because now you have like a fucking bullet.
I don't think you have to explain it. I think most people can kind of intuit.
I'm
shocked by the momentum.
We're not talking about receiver going side to side. We're talking about a receiver straight line motion.
Yes.
A lot of people
forward momentum makes you faster. Yeah.
Yes.
I believe.
So, but Alex, we just said receiver in motion. We didn't say forward motion.
Sure. We didn't specify.
Okay,
so if we give a receiver forward motion, I think it has to be furthest away from the quarterback. That's a harder throw. And I think it compensates. Just one, though.
Can you do it on every play?
Yeah, fuck it. Why not? DBs are bad enough in college.